It's all of us, but at least that's what he's saying. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michael.
Great to be back with you, Barry. We have to finish the discussion on this issue, even if it kills us.
Well, I'm hoping that we can avoid that.
Yeah, I think we can.
Well, we've been talking about the second inaugural of President Barack Obama. And as I mentioned yesterday, unless you're asleep, you pretty much know what Barack Obama is trying to do. He's very transparent in many senses about his agenda. He is still throwing out numerous indicators in his second inaugural speech, which was given on Monday on Martin Luther King Day, that should give us some roadmaps to what the next 1,400 plus days are going to look like. And the one thing, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday, Charles, but the one quote from this speech I think is very important is one that I think is hilarious. Basically, he says here, quote, "Preserving our individual freedoms ultimately requires collective action." Now, if that's not a non sequitur, I'm not sure what is.
Well, yeah, Barack Obama is doing everything he can to eliminate our individual freedoms. In fact, the whole of his proposals was an intrusion and violation of the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, not to mention the Second Amendment, and in many cases, actually the First Amendment. So this idea that, I mean, progressives are very good and very adept at applying the rhetoric of libertarianism, and that's small L libertarianism, to progressivism. And it's only if you're really asleep that you don't catch it. Now, that's the whole point here that we're trying to do. Don't be asleep when these kinds of things are said. Collective action, what does that mean? Normally, it means, in a freedom-loving sense, it means that individuals come together and are co-belligerents to fight for the things that they believe that they should have. Now, when I say fight, that means they organize and come out and fight.
They lobby, Chuck. That's what you're saying, they lobby.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what he means is we in the government will come out and protect the rights that we believe that you should have. That's what he means by collective action. And what he means, we will gin up enough support. We will get 51% of people to come out and say, we're with you, and therefore we will do the things that we want to do. That's what he means by collective action.
Well, he's shifting the focus from individual liberties to collective rights. In other words, he's doing a very interesting and old and fairly not just germane to the Democratic Party, but even to the Republicans. He's creating groups and special interests and pitting them against each other. You know, it's not so much about individual liberties that we can all share. It's about advancing the agendas of certain subgroups in our culture through policy and through procedures. That's what that collective action is all about.
Well, it's the essence of ruling by democracy. This is exactly why the Founding Fathers said a democracy is not the form of government that we want to make. We are forming a republic. Because in the republic, the individual's rights are paramount. In other words, each person is viewed as an individual who has been endowed by God with certain unalienable rights. Does that sound familiar?
It sounds very familiar.
It should. It's the Declaration of Independence. That cannot be superimposed over what Barack Obama is saying, because what he is saying is he's going to pit group against group against group against group to gain these group rights, and we're going to conglomerate everybody into a group, and some groups aren't as worthy of rights. For instance, Christian conservatives. Well, you guys really don't need freedom of speech. In fact, your speech is dangerous. You guys really don't need the right to keep and bear arms because you might actually demand to have your freedom of speech. And if you have a gun, you might be able to demand it and take that right. You can't have that. You might actually insist upon having a right to privacy, to be secure in your person's papers, houses, and effects. You might actually demand to have a trial by jury. You might actually demand to not have to testify against yourself. You might actually demand not to be deemed mentally ill because you don't go along with the dictates of what the federal government thinks should happen. So this is the kind of quote-unquote individual freedom he's talking about, the freedom of the individual to group up and become a political pawn as a group.
Well, right, because that's the whole point, Chuck. Our country was founded on a framework of individual rights and liberties brought down to the most local levels possible. The Soviet model is collectivism and group rights, so that you corral people into various groups, and then you bestow upon them certain aliens. Obviously, if the government is handing you these rights, the government can take these rights away from you when your group goes out of favor. And so right now, in favor are those who think we have to be radical in environmentalism with climate change, because he mentioned that he spent a lot of time in that inaugural address on that. He believes that those who are engaged in homosexuality have to be elevated under law and given those particular rights, because he says they're not treated like everyone else, which is interesting because I don't think that that's true. And also that we have to, as he says, find a better way to welcome the striving, hopeful immigrants who see America as a land of opportunity. So in other words, he's talking about radical immigration changes. And as we know from his first administration, that does not mean getting tougher on illegal immigration. It means amnesty and looking the other way and opening up for more illegal immigration.
Well, that's exactly what it means, because after all, that's a group that can be manipulated. And in fact, with motor voter, they can very easily be fraudulently registered to vote, and voila, you've got a giant, basically it amounts to a giant voting block. And I've heard a number of Republicans conceding to this idea. A lot of the conservative talkers are making noises that, well, I can be convinced on this issue. What they mean is they're capitulating to the idea that we have to do this in terms of democratic and demographic groups rather than treating individuals as individuals. This is why you and I have been so adamant that we need to be careful about watching the major parties and realizing that it's Socialist Party A and Socialist Party B.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they each attempt to group people up in groups and manipulate them in groups. For instance, the Republicans love to manipulate Christian conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of Christian groups out there who facilitate that. I don't think we need to bring up any names, but you and I have worked with some of those groups who are basically all Republican all the time. Don't confuse me with facts. We're going to vote Republican no matter what. And if this is on the Republican agenda, and therefore this needs to be something that appears on a voter guide or whatever. I can remember once you and I got kind of ostracized because somebody was talking about the Iraq war. In order to be considered a conservative, you had to be pro the Iraq war. And I said, I've never been for the Iraq war, ever. And this has nothing to do with being a conservative. I'm a constitutionalist. I believe that we should not be in any war that does not affect us directly. I said a case could be made for the Afghanistan war up to a certain point, but the Iraq war, you got nothing to convince me we should be in that. Well, I was ostracized because I took that position. Now people are sort of saying, yeah, maybe you were right on that. That may have been a mistake. You think?
Quite possibly, yes.
So this is the way the game is being played these days, and neither party has clean hands. Neither one of them. Neither of the major parties have clean hands on this. In fact, you and I used to be in the Constitution Party, and if you'll recall, that was a kind of an unholy alliance between tax rebels and pro-lifers. And what did they do? They threw the pro-lifers out. So I think all parties tend to, you know, this is exactly why George Washington did not want to see the development of political parties, because it tends to firm up lines that shouldn't be firm. In other words, a candidate should step out on his own. I stand for this and this and this and this. And sometimes when you step into a party, oh, you have to do this. You have to do that. You have to have a party platform. Look, Barry, party platforms are a joke, especially on the Republican side. The Democrats don't do too badly on maintaining order on their platforms. But their platforms are so radical that it shouldn't be any shock to anybody who looks at what's going on in Congress or in the White House and says, oh my gosh, how could they do this? Have you read their platform? Barack Obama had to basically jam through the maintenance of God in the Democratic platform, and they had to do it against the will of the delegates in general. The Republicans basically build these conservative platforms and then tell everybody they're free to ignore it at will.
Right. And we've talked about that before on an earlier program. You know, Chuck, we haven't even touched the major third rail issue. Well, we've touched it on another program, and that is the president's agenda on gun control. He's definitely, obviously, the Wednesday before, used the stage setting with a number of young children around him to roll out the Time Is Now document, which is his 23 proposals. And I apologize to our listeners. I think before I said 27, I don't know why I was coming up with four extra ones. Maybe I'm being prescient. I don't know. But maybe those are the executive orders he's going to come up with. But the point is that the president still pushed forward this movement on gun control, saying, and I quote, "America must not rest until all our children, from the streets of Detroit to the hills of Appalachia to the quiet lanes of Newtown, know that they are cared for and cherished and always safe from harm." Well, Charles, no better way to keep your children safe from harm than to know that if you're sending them into a school building, there are personnel there who can deal with a potential life-threatening assault.
Well, let's add also to that statement, unless they're in their mother's womb.
Well, yes, exactly. That's the unspoken side of this, that he spent much time on this whole idea of caring for and cherishing and keeping our children safe as long as they're the survivors.
Yeah, exactly. If they've survived the 9-month development period, then we need to cherish them and love them. Well, he doesn't really mean that. I'm not saying that he hates kids or that he doesn't want to cherish them, but his idea of cherishing and loving children is far different from mine. I don't believe that society owns children. I don't believe that parents own children. Parents are stewards of the life that belongs to God. And in that sense, it is our duty to protect them. Now, are we protecting children by sending them into a place where we know no one is armed, so someone who is armed can come in? And let's face facts. If you banned guns tomorrow, someone will be able to get a hold of a gun and go into a school and shoot it up. There was a shooting in Houston at a community college. And the reason the person was able to shoot several people at this community college was it's a gun-free
zone.
It might as well be marked as a shooting gallery, because the fact is, if a student was allowed to carry a concealed weapon and someone started shooting up the place, for instance, when I was at college, I was an older student. If I'd been allowed to carry a concealed weapon and somebody started shooting up the place, believe me, I'd take my chance and plug the guy before he killed a whole bunch of other people. Where is the compassion? Where's the real compassion? The compassion is really with the people who are willing to step up and risk it all to save other people. That's not what Barack Obama wants to do. That's not what the gun controllers in Congress want to do. This is about consolidating personal power. It has nothing to do with creating safety. It has to do with concentrating power. And until we can get that through our heads. Now, these guys are masters at using the rhetoric. Let's face it. This is all rhetorical. We're going to protect by banning guns. It hasn't worked in any nation on earth. When guns are banned, the only people that have them are thugs, and sometimes those thugs work for the government. Every time I hear the question, why do you need high-capacity magazines, and why do you need armor-piercing bullets, and the answer is, because the government has them. And a lot of people say, well, how can you say such a thing? Because that's exactly what the Second Amendment is about. It's about maintenance of individual liberty in the face of tyranny. And in fact, any government that fears your guns should be feared. I don't know how to be any more clear about that, Barry.
No, I think you're very clear about that. One of the things that we're having a difficulty with is the fact that many constitutionalists, conservatives, Christians, and even libertarians are just sitting here wringing your hands. Oh, woe is me. He got his second term. What can we do? Well, Charles, there's many things that we can do. First of all, is we're supposed to pray for those in authority over us so that we can live a peaceable and godly life. Well, maybe we should all start praying for Barack Obama to have a, well, as I call it, a come to Jesus meeting on his true position of authority, that as a quote-unquote king of the earth, God actually sets and keeps him in derision and laughs when he makes these plans to be smarter than God on gay rights issues, on the climate, on anything else like that. God specifically says that he keeps those rulers of the earth in derision who set themselves against him. So we need to pray for that, but we also need to work. We need to put our faith into action, whether it's our Christian faith, our constitutional adherence, or our conservative principles. And hopefully you have all three of those. But we'd have to say that you'd have to work, and part of that work is staying vigilant, staying informed, contacting your member of Congress. I know I'm not very happy with my member of Congress right now, who voted the wrong way on the fiscal bailout. He's not necessarily shown himself to be someone who is standing on a principle regardless of where the party goes.
Well, listen, Barry, we're out of time. One thing I want to say, too, is one thing you should do, folks out there, is learn. And if you go to our website, www.principledpolicy.com, you can find out about a couple of our Institute on the Constitution classes that are forming now. Go on out there, sign up. It's the best $60 you'll ever spend. And we ask that you join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.